Hello and welcome to the Go Home Show podcast. I'm Michael Henson and joining me as ever is Chris Anderson to review SmackDown from Friday night. It was a season premiere, there was a lot of action, so let's get into it.
And we started the show with the entire locker room out on the entrance ramp with Triple H and Stephanie McMahon in the ring, kind of giving us a preview of what we can expect. Seth Rollins was wearing clothes that only Seth Rollins could get away with. We saw the Street Profits introduced. We saw Otis was introduced with Sami Zayn being introduced, Aleister Black, Kevin Owens. As the Street Profits came out, out came Rude and Ziggler, and it all turned into a brawl, which none of us could see coming when you have every superstar you could possibly imagine out on the ramp, minus Roman Reigns. Once they've been a little bit here and there to kind of get individual superstars over, out comes the Freak, Lars Sullivan, and I must remind you all to call him the Freak whenever you speak of him, because otherwise we may forget that he is the Freak, Lars Sullivan. Comes out, attacks numerous superstars, most notably Chad Gable, obviously, or sorry, Shorty G, gets the brunt of it. Then out comes Jeff Hardy to stand tall, which leads us nicely into our opening match, which was Lars Sullivan against Jeff Hardy. Lars Sullivan winning via freak accident. Crush, what did you think?
Yeah, it was a very short match to say, but it was kind of, as we spoke about before we started recording, that we sort of knew what the result would be because obviously Jeff's on Raw now and Lars is being built up on SmackDown. So we started, obviously, Jeff Jarrett is in the Thunderdome. So that was one of many famous faces in the crowd during matches, which we'll talk about when they come onto them. Yeah, it started Sullivan's on top from the beginning with Jeff Hardy trying to counter him, but his power was a bit too much. He then rolled out away from the top rope splash. We got a twist of fate, but Sullivan was up for even Jeff Hardy gets the top rope, and I'd say hits the freak accident to pick up the win. A short match, didn't really do much because, as I said before, like you knew that Jeff's going to Monday Night Raw anyway, so it'd be interesting to see where both of these go from here.
Yeah, I think the theme for this show, kind of one of the issues it had, is a lot of the results were a bit telegraphed. Like, you kind of knew each result was going to be before it happened. But it did what it needed to do, which was to get Lars Sullivan over as a monster. Next up, we had The New Day in their farewell match against Cesaro, Sheamus and Shinsuke Nakamura. Before the match, we had a very heartfelt promo. In fact, I struggle to call it a promo because a promo in general is to promote something. It was more of a reflection, I'd say, over the last 6 years. There were tears. It was difficult to watch at times. Then after that, we did have a promo with Cesaro, Sheamus and Shinsuke Nakamura because they needed mic time, apparently, before the match. The match was very good. For me, this was match of the night, as we'll get into later on, so I won't get into too much detail. What I did enjoy was that they're getting into the habit at the moment of not using Woods as the man who gets beaten down by the heels. That was always kind of the way they would go. It's always Xavier Woods would get into trouble and then Kofi or Big E would make the save. And they seem to be doing it more with Kofi now and letting Woods stand up more on his own 2 feet, which is nice. A couple of nice spots. We had the classic double stamp from Kingston. We had Big E had a real good back and forth moment with Cesaro, as always, because Cesaro is probably the best person to work with Big E because he's strong enough to do it all. The finish was Woods and Big E combining with the Midnight Hour, potentially the last Midnight Hour for God knows how long, for the win, and then with the big embrace in the ring after the match. Like I said, I really, really enjoyed this. It's not the best New Day match you're ever going to see. It's not the best bar match you're ever going to see, but it's a nice showcase of everything they've done realistically over the last 6 years. Because I feel like Cesaro especially has been feuding with the New Day since their first inception, because it was him and Tyson Kidd all those years back when that was kind of one of the original feuds for the New Day. So it's a nice little showcase of everything they had. I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was very good. Crush, what did you think?
Yeah, as I say, a really good match. Picking up on that promo before, and I might be making this up, but I'm sure when I watched it that Kofi said that he weren't too sure about the tag team at the start, which is very similar to what Tyler Breeze said to us in our interview with him, which you can see on all good podcasting apps and on Sport for Wrestling on YouTube. And it's that when the idea was pitched to them, they weren't sure about it, but then as soon as it happened, they knew it was the right decision. But yeah, it'd be sad to see the New Day go. Obviously, they've had around 6 years as heels and faces, and it was a really good send-off for them. And yeah, hopefully we get to see a Midnight Hour at Survivor Series. Like, I don't know, like Big E's feuding with someone from SmackDown, and then, yeah, we get a Midnight Hour to eliminate one of his teammates who then goes on to feud with towards Royal Rumble. That'd be pretty cool.
I saw a tweet saying the dream is them working towards New Day versus Street Profits versus Breezango at Survivor Series, and I am all in on that triple threat tag match. That'd be great.
Very good. Very good. We then move on to our hero, our savior, Daniel Bryan is back. And he told us how much he's missed the WWE Universe. Obviously, he's not been around since June. And how much he's loved the Thunderdome. Imagine, like, remember when we went in the Thunderdome for SummerSlam? Imagine if you just see ourselves on TV, like you saw me, just chilling next to Daniel Bryan. That would have been pretty cool. Anyway, beside the point. And he was saying he can't wait to get back in the ring with new faces. Then comes that dastardly Seth Rollins, who comes out in, as Chris mentioned before, only an outfit only Seth Rollins could pull off. It's like no socks, pants that are a bit too short, and a blazer with no shirt. And it's just kind of like, yep, that's acceptable because it's Seth Rollins. And I can't wait to see Chris wear it on our next night out in 2024.
Mate, my thighs are not getting into them trousers. My calves aren't getting into them trousers, let alone anything else.
Anyway, he is out, and it said it's great to have him back. But he does it in his Seth Rollins way. It's very villainous. It's very dastardly. And then he attacks Daniel Bryan. There's a couple of back and forths, and Rollins then is like, nah, I'm not having that. So he backtracks. He gets out of there before it can properly escalate. Then the Mysterios are out, and they're walking towards the ring, pushing Rollins back into the ring. And then you get this sort of mini moment where you think that maybe Daniel Bryan will team up with him, and he's like, ha, nah, see you later, mate. Gets out. Then Murphy runs to the ring, and you're like, oh, what's happening here? But no, it's what we thought it would be. Murphy attacks Rollins to then further develop their feud, which is probably going to end at Hell in a Cell, I'd say. He offers the handshake to the Mysterios, but they just walk off and ignore it, which also plays into that whole storyline of him texting Aaliyah, which is, of course, Ray's daughter and Dominic's sister. Chris, are you happy to see Daniel Bryan back?
Oh, yeah, of course. It's Daniel Bryan. It's there aren't many who have legitimate claims to being the best in the world, and he is one of those, and he's always going to be over with the crowd because of that, because of the Yes Movement. I think teaming him or putting him into something with Seth, whether it's now or down the line, is always a good move, and I also think it helps. It just brought an extra spark of reinvigoration to a feud that has gone on for so long that needs something like that just to keep it fresh from time to time. It was good to see him back. It was the right way to do it. If they're going to keep running with the Mysterios versus Rollins versus Buddy Murphy, I think this was the best way to do it. After that, we led straight into the SmackDown Tag Team title match, Street Profits versus Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler. As I said earlier, this was another one that kind of suffered from, we kind of know the titles aren't changing hands with Roode and with Ziggler going off to Raw. In the crowd, we had Ric Flair, another man with the ability to claim being the greatest of all time. This was a very, very short match. We had Dawkins on top early. Then the heels take control. They hit a near fall on Dawkins. Ford breaks up the pin. The match enters into chaos. The ref calls off the match, and that is it. Street Profits retain via either no contest or disqualification, or I didn't hear an official match announcement afterwards. It just kind of, that's it. We're going home now. The heels hit a spine buster zigzag combination on Dawkins. You think they're going to stand tall at the end. But oh no. There comes Montez Ford with a frog splash crossbody. It's the high fly flow, if for any New Japan fans out there. Hits both of them with that. So the faces stand tall afterwards. For me personally, this felt like a bit of a waste of time. It felt a bit shoehorned in. Like, I was very happy to see this match. I think this is a full match, is a real, has a lot of potential. But if it's just going to be a 90-second no result, followed by just the faces standing tall, this could have been a promo or something similar like that to send it off that way, which ended in a bit of a fight, rather than a match which we probably won't see for a while anyway. It's not building to a future match. It's not blowing off a feud. I think there are other people that could have benefited from the TV time more than these guys, but I'm also a massive cynic. Crush, I can tell by your face that you're going to disagree with me. What do you think?
I was shook when you said that you thought it was a waste of time, because I think that this is definitely going to be a match heading into Hell in a Cell. So obviously it's coming from Monday Night Raw and it's going over to Friday Night SmackDown. I think that it's not going to be the end of it. So it sort of plays into that thing. So like if, for example, Street Profits had won and then they do have a match at Hell in a Cell, people are like, well, they've already won, so why are you putting it on? Whereas now it's sort of, there's a reason why it will continue, if you get what I mean.
I don't think this will end up at Hell. If this ends up at Hell in a Cell, this will be the pre-show. And it'll be a give me a result. I think there were, if they want to do something at Hell in a Cell, there was better things they could have done to build to it. And if they're not going to do it at Hell in a Cell, then it was a bit of a waste, in my opinion.
One way or another, we'll find out next Friday at the Go Home show on SmackDown before Hell in a Cell on the Sunday. We then get another Hell in a Cell segment, and it is Bayley and Sasha Banks' contract signing, of course. They're going to be locked inside Hell in a Cell, and there's going to be two other matches at Hell in a Cell, which are going to be Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, which we can get on into a bit. And of course, our very own Drew McIntyre taking on Randy Orton inside one of the most demonic structures in WWE history. So we get everyone's favourite producer, Adam Pearce, out to oversee proceedings. He's getting a lot of TV time really recently.
I love Adam. He does a really good job. Yeah. You know what? He's the voice of reason when usually the voices or authority usually make dumb decisions, but he just seems to do sensible things and I like it. He does the role really well.
Yeah, exactly. And he's got some decent style about him as well, which is always good to see. Sasha Banks signs a contract straight away and they're in the ring. Bayley takes the mic and says that Sasha was baggage she was happy to dump. And the only reason she's angry is because she didn't turn on Bayley first. But Sasha reminds her of the times that she's had her back, obviously. It goes back all the way back to NXT and that ridiculously mental match where Bayley first won the NXT Women's Championships at one of the takeovers. I think it was Brooklyn 2. I'm probably wrong there because it was a long time ago and I'm very old now. However, she's playing this role so well because she gets up, she gets a chair, which she always brings to the ring now. She doesn't sign the contract and she walks off. So Sasha calls her a coward for running off and she can't do that in Hell in a Cell. Chris, this storyline is very good. As I said, it's been developed over for a few years now. Do you think this could be a match of the night in a week on Sunday?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you look at how good the first ever Iron Woman's match was back then, I think even back then when people had like very appreciative of the talents of them, it shocked people how good this match was. And I think people are sleeping on this feud a little bit and it will just be that good again. My only issue I had with this segment was when Banks was saying, if I'd wanted to turn on you, I could have done it a long time ago. Is she forgetting the Elimination Chamber match from 2017, was it? When she yeeted Bayley off a pod? Like, let's not act like we're all innocent in this. Like, I thought Bayley held her role really well, which was making the point of, I turned on you before you turned on me. That's actually a really good explanation. There's nothing wrong with, like, I enjoy it when heels have a point, and that felt like a very legitimate point to have. And then obviously it means that Banks has a reason to be feuding with her because she did try and end her career. She went too far. I liked it a lot. I just didn't need the, I could have turned on you if I wanted to turn on you line, because we've seen them go back and forth for a long time. But by the by, as I've said before, I think this match deserves, I hope that the Hell in a Cell match isn't the blowout to this feud, the payoff to this feud. I want it to carry on because it deserves to be a main event in its own right, whether that's a Survivor Series or Rumble or Mania or whatever it is. It deserves to have the biggest spotlight it could possibly have on it.
I think that it's going to go to Mania because looking at internet rumors this week, and it's apparently that Ronda Rousey is going to be back at WrestleMania 37. So I think that she'll go onto the Raw one, and then we have Bayley versus Sasha for the women's title on SmackDown side. And yeah,
agreed. I think Ronda Rousey makes sense on Raw. Like she feels more like a Raw fit, yeah. Especially with Charlotte being redrafted there. I'd love to see something a lot. I know we talk about Ronda Rousey triple threats because we remember the last WrestleMania one, and it feels like she should have her own singles feud. Mm-hmm. If you gave me Charlotte Flair versus Asuka versus Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania, I'm all in on that. Like that's the best possible match you could put on Raw.
Let's put Naomi. I'd be very grateful for that. Good to see Naomi get the shot that she deserves.
Yes. And we should also mention that Bianca Belair is a future SmackDown Women's Champion, because if the commentary team lets get away with not saying that, there will be hell to pay. We haven't mentioned it yet in the review, and we're going long already. We put a structure in, we're already going long. But Bianca Belair got about 79 shout-outs as a future Women's Champion.
She's the strongest, the quickest, and the smartest.
I love Bianca Belair. I think she's great, but there is something. There's a bit of forcing it down your throat. But by the by, we move on into the main event, which is Roman Reigns with Paul Heyman versus Braun Strowman for the Universal title match. In the crowd, we had Mark Henry. Ooh. We had Keith Lee, who didn't get announced as being in the crowd, but it's Keith Lee. You're gonna notice him. It's Keith Lee. And also, Goldberg sat in the crowd. He was back. And there was some panic amongst the wrestling internet community because Goldberg put an Instagram post out saying that he would be at the Thunderdome watching closely. I think some people had a fear that he might be back, but fortunately he was just in the crowd. In the match, Reigns took early control. It hit a Superman punch on Strowman on the apron, knocking to the outside, and then hit a drive-by. He continues to beat down Strowman on the outside until Strowman launched Reigns over the announce desk and then hit his running shoulder tackle to Reigns, sending him over the barrier. When we get back from the break, Strowman hits a Dominator and then a choke slam to Reigns for a near fall. And as he's kicking out, we get the classic, the signature Roman Reigns low blow kick out, then hits a spear on Strowman for a near fall. I was surprised this was a near fall. I thought they were going to protect the spear more, much in the way they did back, was it 2 years ago in the Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar feud going into Mania? You know, where one F5 would beat anyone. One spear would beat anyone. Here, though, however, Braun Strowman does kick out. Strowman goes to the power slam, gets reversed into a guillotine. It goes back and forward for a little bit, but eventually Braun Strowman taps out to the guillotine. Interesting to see if this will be a finish for Roman Reigns. There's a very old wrestling theory that heels should use submissions for their finisher because you want to see the face fight against it. Like, that's a big moment for you. And especially with kicking out the spear, it'll be interesting to see. However, almost as soon as the bell rings, out comes Jey Uso. He walks down to the ring. As he's walking down, Roman Reigns gets Heyman to get him a chair. The line that Reigns delivers is, "If I can do this to him," as he points at Braun Strowman, "imagine what I can do to you." He then starts to beat the holy hell out of Braun Strowman with the chair. The rest, this was weird to me. The rest came down to break it up. And then I don't know if I missed something that Reigns said or if Paul Heyman said it, but all the refs suddenly got out of the ring as if to say, "We don't care about Braun Strowman anymore. He's on Raw. So do what you want to him." Regardless, Jey Uso eventually gets into the ring. Reigns gives Uso the chair to give him a free shot. He turns his back to Jey Uso and says, "You get the first free shot." Jey Uso throws the chair away. As Reigns is turning back round, he hits him with a big right, a super kick, and then starts to beat the living hell out of him with the chair. This, however, is unacceptable for the refs, so they decide to break that up. As they're being separated, Reigns gets free and clocks Jey Uso with a very good Superman punch, leaving him prone on the floor. And then as he's walking off, he says something along the lines of, "And now I have to turn my back on you." If that's not a Botchamania ending, Matthew, I'm calling you out on this, with the Mighty Bush music playing and a fade to black, then what are we doing here? This segment was very, very good. I enjoyed it a lot. It really played into the Tribal Chief thing. It was very Godfather-esque. It was very Mobster Boss-esque. It's almost saying, like, "I don't want to have to do this to you, but you're kind of forcing my hand. You're embarrassing the family." I really, really enjoyed this. I thought the post-main event segment was better than the match, but only because the match, again, suffered from the, we kind of know what the result is, so we're just waiting for Strowman to lose. I like the fact that Reigns used a submission for the finisher. All in all, very, very good main event. Crush, what did you think?
So yeah, this is my one match to watch from the night, because I'm not going to recap it all because Chris just went through it. But ending the match with a submission is so interesting to me, because Reigns is known for his holds and Strowman rarely loses to submission. And as Chris said, it's you expect the face to sort of push back against that. So it makes it so much more interesting, and it makes Reigns look so much more dominant and really like that Godfather type boss. Now, it was a huge physical match, like we've seen in previous encounters between them. But again, as Chris mentioned, the result was a bit predictable because obviously we've got the Hell in a Cell match versus Jey Uso in 2 weeks' time. But also at the same time, as well as being predictable, it wasn't a predictable ending like the spear and Superman punch, 1, 2, 3. It's the submission. We then get the Uso versus Reigns storyline developing, as Chris mentioned. But I think in the next few weeks, Jey needs to look capable of beating Matt Hell in a Cell, because at this moment in time, it's just going to be a Reigns victory. Whereas if we throw that sort of jeopardy in, which we spoke about a few times on the podcast, then it'll really add to it. Chris, what was your match of the night?
I'm going to very quickly go on to what you're saying there. Very, very quickly, and I promise quickly. I like the idea of having the submission in there. It adds a new wrinkle, especially with it being an I Quit match. I think that's a very, very good thing. I think we'll see Jimmy Uso again in some form in Hell in a Cell. How that fits, I don't know. My match of the night, however, was the six-man tag match, the farewell match to New Day versus Sheamus, Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura. I'm a big tag wrestling fan. I'm a big New Day fan. So this, for me, just, I think this would have been match of the night regardless of what happens. They could have shit the bed. I still would have called it match of the night. It's just, like I said earlier, I won't recap it all again. It's a good look back at everything they've done over the last 6 years. It's very, very enjoyable. The promo beforehand is very, very good. There's also a interview they did with, which is like an internet exclusive with WWE. I saw it on their Twitter. It's like a 5-minute interview with New Day. If you don't feel yourself welling up listening to Xavier Woods talk about his time in New Day, you are dead inside. That's just my opinion. That's fine. But definitely check out the six-man match. It's very, very good. Going into top three moments, my number one moment is the New Day promo from before their match. It's very, very good. It makes you feel things, which is what a promo should do. That was for me. If you're going to see anything from this, check that out. After that, number two is the post-Roman Reigns Braun Strowman segment with Jey Uso. It just works really, really nicely. It builds the feud beautifully. It probably is the best thing in WWE at the minute, this feud. It just makes sense. So this is something you should check out. The, like I said, the Godfather, mob boss, tribal chief style of it works beautifully. And number three is something we've not yet mentioned because it didn't get a lot of screen time, but it's something I'm excited for the potential of, which is Otis and Sami Zayn seem to be hinting at a bit of a feud as they're announcing the people at the start of the show, like, oh, this is who's on SmackDown. They mentioned Sami Zayn, who came out big, classic, skanking Sami Zayn. And the next man they introduced was Otis, Mr. Money in the Bank. And they had a little moment there. So that kind of gave it a little bit of a tease of maybe Otis cashes in on Sami Zayn. You can go for any title you want. If he doesn't think that he's ready to be heavyweight champion, maybe he goes after Sami Zayn. And then later on, Otis is doing an interview backstage. Before you can all even talk, Sami Zayn comes out and says there's two types of people in the world. There's winners and there's Otis's. Otis lost his best friend in Tucky. He lost his girlfriend, Mandy Rose, to Raw. And now he's going to lose Money in the Bank contract to The Miz. Otis then yeets Sami Zayn across the backstage. If this is going to be a thing, I like it a lot. I think this is the best place that both these can go. Adds a bit of intrigue. It keeps Money in the Bank strong, as this is something you actually have to do with. I like this. This was my top three. Cross, what were yours?
So here we go. Just picking up on your last point. We have an American version of British Bake Off. So it's the American Bake Off. Hmm. It's a celebrity edition. Sami Zayn is on it. He's making his signature dish. It's the American Paul Hollywood. He's going to give him the handshake. He rips open his shirt. It's a referee shirt. Otis comes out from behind, attacks him, gets the win, and he's the new Intercontinental Champion. Fantasy booking at its finest.
I'm well on that. That's dead good. Let's go with it. In fact, no, let's have it in England. Get him in the tent. I don't care how we have to flip the rules for it. Let's get him in the tent. Paul Hollywood counting the 1, 2, 3. I'm all in.
So moving into my top three moments, I've got two in there that Chris has spoke about, but I'll start with number three. And it's a potential Seth Rollins and Daniel Bryan future feud. Obviously, Daniel Bryan is back. Seth Rollins came out to interrupt him. But obviously, we'll have to wait for the Murphy Mysterio storyline to play out first, but I'd really love to see them two get it on in the future because they are two of the best in WWE at this moment in time. The second one is the New Day promo, as Chris mentioned. It's heartfelt. You need to watch it. That's all I have to say on that matter. And my top moment is the Roman Reigns submission and the Jey Uso chair shots because of how much it plays in the storyline development of Jey potentially having to tap out in a guillotine or saying, I quit in a guillotine, but then also seeing this sort of new side of Jey Uso. That is all we have time for today. To summarise, SmackDown is in a new era, the season premiere. There's so many more matches to plan ahead of Hell in a Cell. There's only three matches confirmed, as well as heading to 2021. There's so many more feuds that can develop. Roman Reigns is looking tougher and tougher each week, properly seeing him as the tribal chief now with a submission in his arsenal. And Hell in a Cell is going to be very, very good. Chris, any final words from yourself?
Yeah, complete change of topic. But if you've not seen it yet, watch the G1 A-Block finale from yesterday because it's unbelievable. It's a really, really good show. Will Ospreay turning heel. We saw Great O'Khan, who I was nearly on a show with before he pulled out for very good reason because he would have been lost there. It was a mad show. Kota Ibushi is in the final of the G1 for the third year in a row. Check it out. But if you're not going to watch that and you just want to watch WWE, SmackDown's very good. Enjoy it. It's nicely built into Hell in a Cell, which is next Sunday, I believe.
Yeah, 25th. Yep.
Next Sunday. I'm excited for it. All I ask for is they get rid of the red cells because they were always difficult to watch. Just give us a normal cell. I'll be happy with that. Other than that, though, very, very excited. Thank you so much for listening in. Make sure to leave us a review on the podcast if you've enjoyed it. Follow us on Twitter at Go Home Show Pod, or check out our YouTube, which is Sporf Wrestling, for all our interviews. Make sure to check out the main podcast and all our reviews on all good podcasting apps. We'll be back to review Raw on Tuesday, and make sure to check out the main podcast with the very special guest from Inside the Ropes, Kenny McIntosh, and the aforementioned Mr. Money in the Bank, Otis, stops by for a chat. Thank you for listening. Now let's go home.